everybody. Welcome to Season 2 of Great Minds, People and Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Brenna Kinsey, Chief People Officer of Advertising Week and Emerald. Today's guest is Debbie Dyson. Debbie is the CEO of 110, a nonprofit organization that is driving a skills-first movement to unlock career opportunities for talent without four-year degrees. As a coalition, 110 works with leading CEOs in their companies to transform hiring and advancement practices through skills-first strategies and to connect talent without traditional college degrees to in-demand jobs at America's top employers. Hi, Debbie. Welcome.
Hey, hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Debbie, why is 110's mission of unlocking career opportunities for talent without a traditional four-year degree so important?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great way to sort of start the conversation, because as you think about our work in unlocking these amazing opportunities for talent that candidly for decades upon decades have just not been seen. Many employers just through history have had jobs that have been posted that say a four-year degree is required. And when you have 66% or so of Americans without a four-year degree, you're locking a significant population that is looking for gainful employment. And the further you dig into the analysis, it's more, I don't call it disheartening, but obviously it's discouraging when you have, people of color where it's 70-something% and higher that do not have that ability. So this is about trying to give equal opportunity for everyone and making sure that employers are looking at a broadened pool, because there is a labor shortage. So we can help solve that if you're willing and able to think about talent again that does not have a four-year degree.
Thank you so much for sharing those statistics. And this is a term that I learned at a 110 gathering 2 years ago, and it was such an aha moment, and I want to talk about a little bit. Tell us a little bit about the curb cut effect that 110 is really creating. For those not familiar with the term, it's a principle from accessibility design where changes or accommodations made for a specific group, such as people with disabilities, end up benefiting a much broader population. An example that was given at 110, which really resonated for me, was, for example, curb cuts, which are very visible in sidewalks all over cities like Manhattan, were originally designed to assist people using wheelchairs, but they also now help parents with strollers or travelers with luggage or our delivery workers and so many more people. This effect demonstrates how inclusive designs can have a wide-reaching benefit beyond the intended audience. Tell us a little bit about how 110 is actually creating that as well.
Overall, this is a win-win. When you start an opportunity and you open one door, you begin to see the benefits on a much broadened scale. So as you use this sort of curb, effect just from a handicap perspective, I don't think anybody had anticipated by doing this, it actually has helped other groups and other populations. So it's very, very similar. It was never intended to be just isolated for a set group of individuals. It's if you start here and see the benefits and the payback that actually has been gained and the energy and excitement of giving people opportunities that, again, have been locked out, it is infectious. I think that's the best way that something starts to work. It starts to feel less about a almost like an initiative, and it's more of a movement. It's like, this isn't just an HR task and like, check the box, we've removed the degrees, now we can move on to the next thing. This is cultural. It's how we live, it's how we hire, it's how we give back. So it's kind of all inclusive. And I think that's the energy and excitement that we've seen is we started here, but yet it sort of had this trickle down impact in so many other aspects that I don't think we had even anticipated.
And what was the catalyst that inspired 110 to focus on removing the four-year degree requirement and instead adopt a skills-first approach to hiring?
110 is a relatively young organization. It was founded 4 years ago by incredibly inspirational ex-CEOs that had a mission, had a business roundtable with other CEOs. And unfortunately, this was during the pandemic. It was during the moments of Black Lives Matter. Unfortunately, it was when George Floyd's passing had occurred. And it was, what can we do to sort of hopefully heal some pain that was out there. And so the idea became, well, what do big companies have? Well, they have jobs, they have opportunities, and they have resilience, and they have a passion. And so what can we do with all of those great things? Ken Frazier, Ken Chenault, Charles Phillips, Ginni Rometty, Kevin Scher said, we've done this in our organizations where we've been able to think about talent beyond. We know that we have great jobs and we are willing and wanting a coalition of like-minded thinkers to come with us to, again, expand opportunity. And I think the big thing for me here, when I said it's a few things, when we've talked about skills first, the very simple definition is think about the skills first that are required for the job before you think about anything else. It started to get attached to, well, it's for those that don't have a degree. But the beautiful thing is that's a yes. And it actually can be for people with a degree, because what's been happening is people are making job changes. So you may be sitting and I've been doing such and such job for X number of years, and now I want to get into healthcare. Well, I don't want the financial debt. I don't want to have to go back to school. Is there something else I can do to help me accelerate? Well, going to a skills developer that can help you develop those skills that don't require the degree gives others, even those with degrees, opportunities to do job changing. So that's why when I say this is a win-win, it's for everyone, those without a degree that can go in and focus on the skills, those with a degree that are looking for a change. So that's the beauty of, I think, what's happened. And that was sort of the catalyst. Unlock opportunities, give employers great talent, eager individuals, get people back to work, get this nation thriving, get the economy moving. You know, I think, again, the results sort of speak for themselves on why we felt this was the right thing for us to do and to strike a movement that I think is a safe place for employers to be. It's very, very safe to do this. Very safe.
And once companies commit to removing degree requirements, Emerald, for example, we committed to doing this 3 years ago. We haven't looked back since. But in your experience, what hurdles do they face internally when implementing a skills-first hiring and promotion practice?
It's a great question. I think I said it earlier. You know, it's not as simple as just looking at a job description and saying, let's just take out 4-year degrees. That seems like, oh, okay, let's have everybody do that. This is a cultural change for organizations. You have to rewire your thinking. So as I mentioned, this is decades upon decades of traditional hiring that says you get a resume, you look at the resume and you see, do they go to school? And you're like, great, put them in the yes pile. No degree, they were going into the no pile. So you're having to rewire hiring managers' thinking that have been doing this for a while that has said the golden ticket to get a job is a degree. We're saying that that's not the only reason why. It doesn't mean that everybody doesn't need to go to school any longer and just, you know, that's the way that we're going to do this. That's not what we're suggesting. We're suggesting about opening up a broader pool, but you have to change your thinking. You have to think about your hiring practices. So as you do get resumes, what are the things that you should be thinking about, again, first, before you do your, not say rejections, but the things that actually don't fit. So there's training, there's obviously support from the top. You need your CEOs that are like invigorated, that says, this is the right thing for our culture. You need to bring in your associates to help them understand the benefits of why doing this type of approach is actually helpful for them. Because, you know, what I will tell you that we've seen, and this is not a surprise, but there's some resentment that comes in. You know, you have somebody that's been working for 10, 15 years, got their degree, went through the hard knocks to get there, and they may think, oh, well, now it's so much easier for somebody else to come in. And that's not what we're really trying to perpetuate. Again, this is about trying to level the playing field for opportunities, bringing in associates that can add value in a very sort of inclusive, equal opportunity manner. And hopefully in the end, it improves productivity. It helps the company with engagement. You're getting good quality people from all walks and forms and shapes of life that I think are overall effective. But it's a big cultural practice change movement that must occur. Because there's bias that I think we all have consciously or subconsciously that we try to help with.
And I want to reemphasize something you said, and that is that you are not telling people that your degree does not matter. You're not telling people, don't go get that education if you have the means and resources to. What we are saying is, let's not disqualify people who did not get a chance or did not want to go through the traditional four-year education through undergrad, college, or, you know, obviously getting even more degrees.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, another way to think about it, like when we've done our studies, if you have a job that's open and you post it and you get 100 individuals that have applied for your job and all of those have, say, a degree, when you remove the degree, you actually are getting four times more qualified. Qualified. That's the key word here. Qualified. This isn't about letting everybody in, because what you're doing is you're saying, here's this job. This job needs this technical skill, this technical skill, this technical skill. What we, 110, are responsible to do is identify those that are a precise match for the skills that that job required. So you're going to get a pool that would have people with degrees that have the skills and a degree, and you're going to get people with those skills that don't have a degree. Both pools can now be offered, and then you make a balanced decision on, if I think about the skills required, let's say, what's a better pick? But now you just have a larger pool. Now you have 400 opposed to 100, and your odds are much more increased of actually finding the right fit in a, hopefully in a balanced way. You know, I say this somewhat tongue-in-cheek, like, hey, look, I would like my doctor to have a degree. I think that that's probably important. I think a lawyer, engineers, like, so that's why, again, we're saying it's not every job doesn't need a degree. Absolutely. Get your degree. If you have the means, to your point, it's the right fit for you. I mean, I think if anything, the pandemic exposed that some people learn differently. Some people excel in a classroom environment with a professor teaching. Some do not. And I think the pandemic proved that, just even as far as how people even work from home. So I think this actually helped us in an interesting kind of way, sort of dispel this ability that you must be in a room, you must get the education to be productive and to be successful. And that's not completely true.
Love that. And I love that you emphasize the fact that people learn differently. Some people learn better in a classroom environment, and some people would like to just jump in and get their hands dirty and learn on the job. And neither are good or bad or right or wrong. It's just different style of working and learning.
Yeah, I mean, we've used this tagline, I think, for employers as well as talent. We want to meet you where you're at. So we want to meet employers where they're at on their journey as far as how they're looking at hiring. And we want to meet the talent for what they need and where they're at. And I think that's why the matching is so essential, is let's just meet you for what you need.
And I think employers and maybe HR teams and recruiting teams might need to learn and get training on how to look for skill-based hiring first. How does 110 help those companies that want to remove the degree requirement but maybe don't have the expertise in being able to evaluate based on a skills-first hiring?
A couple of things that we try to do when someone makes a decision of, hey, we want to implement a skills-based program or, you know, movement, what is it we need? So the first thing that we try to do is an assessment, like, what are you doing today? Have you even been doing this at all? Do you have any jobs that do not require a degree? Have you had a program? So we try to assess a little bit of the maturity of the organization. Hence my comment of, we want to meet you where you're at. So you'll have, in our coalition, we have companies that have been doing this for decades that are much more mature, but need some refinement. You have some that are just getting started and have no idea where to start. So it's that assessment first. It's doing a little bit of an inventory on the types of jobs. What are the location? We do a lot around assessing the culture, as I mentioned. Culture is important. What's the culture of the company? How receptive are they to change? Is change difficult? Or not say, is it rigid? But how do you typically embrace change so that we can then customize? I will tell you a big learning lesson that we got when we started is, this isn't one size fits all. There are different sizes of organizations. There are different locations. There's different types of jobs. Again, the maturity level. And so what we had to refine was customizing it so that we could fit it to what best makes sense. And the bigger thing is the pace. What else do you have going on? This is a huge undertaking. It's not so simple just flipping a switch and away we go. So what's your ability to consume and the pace in which you want to do something, and so that we can tailor it accordingly? And I think that's been a big help. And I think when we've heard positive feedback from our coalition members, that's been the thing of, oh, you get us, you see us, you understand us, and this will be much more successful. And we have so many success stories of when we've done that, and it's worked with great talent telling us as well.
I love that. I love the grassroots customizable approach that 110 has. What are some of the success stories that the coalition members have had as you've helped them through their journey?
There's one company in particular that I love to talk about. There's many, but I like this particular story because I think it really sort of embraces really what was happening, which is an org called Cleveland Clinic, a fantastic partner that we have. But it's, you know, it's healthcare. And so remember, we started during the pandemic, and I think we can all remember there was a feeling about healthcare, whether it was positive or not, and where people were at. But now we're talking in Cleveland, very diverse city, and there was probably more of a, I don't want to say a negative, but definitely a fear that was out there. So Cleveland Clinic needed to go through a bit of a cultural evolution on their identity. Who do we want to be for the community? So we helped a little bit with that. Then we talked about how do we dispel the myths that may exist in the healthcare? Because I think normally we might all think, oh, if I want to get into healthcare, I must need a degree. I want a doctor or nurse. You have no idea. There are thousands of positions that you don't. You clearly need to go to some sort of trade school and obviously get certified, et cetera, but not every job in a hospital needs a degree. So there was that education. And then from there, it was really their CEO is phenomenal. He was sort of preaching and really sort of evangelizing that this is going to make a difference for us, not only for Cleveland Clinic, but for the community in which we serve. And off they went, and it came out like gangbusters. We did a case study with Harvard Business School that really walked through in a lot of detail all of the varying changes that they did, and 110 was with them every step of the way. And again, I consider it an amazing success story of talent talking about how their lives were changed as a result of the work that Cleveland Clinic had done. So those stories, I can multiply that by tens and 20s and 30s of others that went through maybe not so much of a big cultural evolution, but really an awakening in talent telling us. And, you know, if I can tell you anything, this job is so energizing that when you get a story about turning someone's life around where they just thought all hope was lost, that they just didn't think they were going to get a great job with a great company. And now they're telling us stories of, guess what happened? Not only did you help me, it's a generational thing. Like, if we want this to work, it's not just about that person. It's about the generations to come, right? And so that's this paying it forward. It's a great feeling when you get it right.
I love that. And I love the generational trickle-down effect that it creates. And 110 also focuses on the family sustaining job aspect. Tell us a little bit about that.
Again, like going back to the very beginning, these are big companies. These are Fortune 500. So if you think about it, they have great jobs that have great income and great salaries. So what we were trying to do was, when we did our research beyond the numbers that I gave you on Americans that do not have a four-year degree, the salary levels are significantly off relative to a family of four. That is a non-person of color making six figures to a person of color making low five digits. And so we were trying to balance that out by saying, as you think about not only the absence of the four-year degree, think about the wages that are attached to those jobs. These are not minimum wage jobs. These are professional careers. Because the big piece of it is, if you get that individual in, not only are they going to make a great income, they can get great benefits, and they hopefully can have a long-term sustaining career. Because for this to work, you know, I know we have like a 10-year mission. You know, we want this to be, if we're not here in 10 years, but it's still going. This can't be 10 years and we're out and the whole thing goes away. It needs to be sustainable. So getting the family sustaining allows the ability for that person to hopefully have some roots in the organization and give them a pathway for not only where they started, but where can they potentially go? So this is promotional opportunities. I got in, I've been doing this job for however long I've been doing it. Now I have skills that I've gained even further that can put me on a pathway of success to now get the next best job at that same company or possibly another company because I've gained the skills. So the wages are confidence. It obviously, again, provides for family. So when I talk about those stories, can I tell you, it's a lot of what we hear. I never thought I was going to be able to afford a car. I never thought I was going to be able to put my child in daycare. I mean, we know that the cost of living is definitely increasing in varying aspects. So this is why lives are being changed when you're making a good, sustainable income and you have one job. You don't have to do three or four in order to make, you know, make the ends meet. So that's the reward that I think we're able to pay back.
And I think that's such a significant impact that 110 is making with the coalition members. And I think the data that you got for that is through the MIT's Living Wage Calculator.
Correct. So another partner. So it was when we thought about family sustaining, what are the elements that we include in that? And so every state, I mean, it's all varying. I mean, there are some on the high end, like New York and California, that say for family sustaining, however you define your family, by the way, we're not describing it for you. It could be I'm a single individual, single mother, single father, family of four, family of two, whatever it happens to be. But you can go as high as 80,000, as low as, so to speak, in the 50s. So every state varies. And we're saying just identify those jobs. Those are the jobs that we would like to see if we could get that talent in. Some, by the way, hire above that anyway. So even if that's just where we say the starting point is, but many of these jobs are starting even higher. So it's big dollars for people that never thought that that would be possible.
For me, and luckily for my CEO at the time, this felt like a no-brainer to sign up for this, to sign up to the living wage family sustaining jobs, to remove college degree requirements from jobs that don't require it. What is the hesitation that you're seeing, and how can people who are listening to this and say, yes, I want my company to sign up for this, but I'm not sure if some of the team members on my leadership team will buy in?
This may be enough to say, this may surprise you, like, I don't want to have to convince anybody. I don't want to have to. I think this is one of these things that you either believe in this and you think it's the right thing to do to remove degree requirements, or you don't. And I've said this to the team, and it's not being disparaging. This may not work for everybody. If this doesn't feel right for you, then that's okay. But if I have to spend the time to try to convince you that this is right, it's probably not right. So I'll say that initially. However, what we find is hesitancy, like, yes, we believe, but we're not sure. There's a piece that's, I mentioned earlier, there's a time component here. Like, you have to be able to embrace this in your culture. You're going in and telling your hiring managers, your talent acquisition managers, your HR team, we're going to go in with an approach that may seem untraditional. It may seem untraditional. It may seem controversial, but we think it's the right thing to do. So that tapping into the culture of the company, as I've said a few times, is essential. Will your culture embrace something like this? If the answer is yes, we will help you with everything else on what are things that you need to think about? How do you prepare your managers? What are the guidebooks? We don't leave you stranded ever. And we never leave the talent stranded either. We don't want to just, here's the job, see you later, good luck. We stay engaged with our companies as well as the talent. We want the feedback. Is it working? Did you get the support? What happened? How was the interview process? So it is iterative. We do this over and over again. So the barriers are truly, to me, is your culture ready to adopt it into how you hire? Because it's changing and breaking and disrupting your traditional way of hiring by introducing something different. And if you're okay with that, we will help you and guide you along the way. And we have metrics, and we have, again, training, we have webinars, we have a coalition that will tell you, this didn't work for us, you may want to try this. So we do bring the best of everyone together and have these open forums to talk in a safe place. You know, these are the elephants in the room. We talk about them, like, what's the problem? What's happened? Let's talk about it. How did you solve it? Here's some things that we've seen with other members. That's what makes this a beautiful thing. Like-minded, resilient CEOs and other executives coming together and rallying about a way to really ignite, you know, our nation and get great jobs out there for great people hungry to work and address this labor shortage. Every quarter, every month, we're like, here's the job report. We grew jobs, but we don't have enough people. Hey, there's a lot of people out here.
There's a lot of people you are not tapping into that will actually be super loyal to your company because of this opportunity that they are being given with you removing barriers.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. Just one last thing I'll tell you. The retention piece is huge. We've seen that to what you just said. So when you do hire somebody, like, feeling as though you took, not say a risk, but a chance on me, there's a loyalty that pays back. So the retention is somewhere in the, you know, 89 to 90% retention for those that come under a skills first, significantly higher than sort of the non-traditional, because you saw them. You saw them, and you took, if you want to call it a chance, but you decided that this was the right thing to do, and you've been paid back because of their productivity, their loyalty, their engagement, and it's working.
I can personally, as a coalition member, vouch for the handholding, the tactical help that the community support that a 110 offers to companies that are listening. Once you realize, hey, this is value aligned, this is something I definitely want to do, I don't know how to do it, that's when 110 truly comes in and is a great partner along the way. You mentioned talent, the fact that you're also partnering with them and helping support them in their journey. Can you tell us a little bit about how 110 engages with local communities to build an ecosystem of candidates in that pipeline for the career growth for the diverse talent?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So when we started, one of the biggest ways that we were able to sort of get this going was go into areas of population that were high, that had a higher proportion of individuals without talent. So New York, Chicago, Dallas, Atlanta, we went into those communities, aligned ourselves with a local sort of community development leader, somebody that really had a pulse for what was happening in their environment. And then we got ourselves connected with like workforce development to say, what employers are here that are looking for jobs? What are the types of jobs? As you can imagine, each location is different. There are more rural areas that maybe it's a little bit different. We've worked with community colleges. Can I just tell you, that's a gold mine? Because we're talking about without four-year degrees. If you have an AA or going to community college, we are absolutely partnering with those organizations locally to say, hey, as they're getting ready to graduate, point them over here. We have opportunities that will align to whatever they just received their AA in. So definitely deep there. And I think it has been a gold mine of opportunities to, again, help us understand the culture of the location, the culture of the companies there, and the types of jobs. Because what we hope we can start to do, and it's starting to pay off, is we can anticipate. So what we want to start to do is almost like forecast hiring, like bench hiring. We can see it. We see what's happening in your community. So we're going to get ahead of it. So when you start to open up a new site, we can say, guess what? We have a talent pool that's sitting within 110 that has the skills, the experience, and everything else that you need ready to be hired. And so we can get ahead of it before they actually even have to post the job. So I think that's the beauty of what's happening, is having such a deep coalition expansion, the community outreach, we're able to do forecasting and prediction and get ahead of it and create the bench and give talent. Like, we already have the job. It's just waiting for you to get matched to the employer. And so that's kind of how it all comes together. It's this amazing ecosystem of companies, location, partners, and talent, all matching, aligning, and, you know, off we go. So that's why I keep saying, when it works, magic. It's just magic.
Thank you so much for sharing that process with us. And as we wrap up, looking ahead, if there's one thing that you hope to see change in the way companies are approaching hiring and talent development over the next 5 years, what would it be, and how do you see 110 continuing to lead this change in this area?
I think I said this earlier, you know when change happens, when I don't have to talk about it. I don't have to define it. I don't have to tell you what skills first is. It's just the way that you speak. That's when I know real change is happening. If I have to tell you or quote unquote convince you, it's not working. So my hope is that as, you know, you start attending seminars or you're on panels or you're at an HR conference and somebody's sitting on a panel and saying, well, we focus on skills first and as we hire, and it's just like natural. It's a natural part. And so where I hope 110 has had the impact is that we've changed the way of thinking. We've disrupted the traditional way of hiring, that people are just thinking about it just as they breathe. It's just how we do things here. And you've got talent and stories upon stories of impact that has occurred. And you start to get job reports that no longer see a gap. Like, you no longer see a gap. Like, now you have talent getting into jobs at the same pace as job creation. Because right now it's imbalance. It's, you got too much of this and too little of that. When you get those things kind of moving in sync, you know now that we've expanded a pool. We've embedded it into the way that we're just thinking, and it's just natural. And I don't have to talk about it. I can talk about more about great companies and things that they're doing that have really sort of turned them around and their hiring is great. But I don't even need to say it. I don't need to convince you at all. It's just who we are and how we work.
I love that. for those who are interested in learning more about 110 and partnering with 110 and evaluating potential opportunities with 110, how can they find you? How can they find 110?
Yeah, very easy. We're all over LinkedIn. It's 110 spelled out the way that it sounds. So it's the number one, O-N-E-10-T-E-N.org. Look for us there. You can reach out on LinkedIn. There's an application, not even an application, but just an interest. We've got an amazing team that is as invigorated, as high end, and as passionate. And that's what you want in order to make this great work happen. But reach out to us. We have many materials that we can even just send to at least just pique the interest. And even if somebody doesn't join 110, we still think we can be helpful. You don't have to be part of a coalition in order for this to work. So we think that there is a win-win, whether you come with us and we guide you, or whether we can just give you materials to at least get you started on your way. From my perspective, either works. It's about getting great talent with great companies to align, no matter how it happens.
Truly mission-driven. Thank you so much, Devi. Thank you for your time.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you for having me.